Good evening. Welcome to your, ours, the world's Friday Night Live. Happy to take questions. Sorry for those who prefer to type than talk. But I have been a little lazy at getting the studio up and running and all the things up and running. But I am happy to chat with you tonight. I'm happy to take your text questions. I'm happy to take your voice questions on X, freedomain.com/donate. And thank you for dropping by. And I will remember, or I will, you know, just slap it on the earphones with a phone, because the only way to live stream on X is through a phone. Not even a tablet, only a phone. And it's just a little easier. But I know that the people who've been complaining, and you're right to do so, and I appreciate that you can't type your questions if I'm on X, because I don't really keep the chatty thing up. But here we are. Here we are. So happy to take questions, comments. Doing a little thing on X at the moment. And this may seem like, you know, Reddit tier atheism 101. Oh, wait for it. Let's see how this works. Let us see how this works. We're going to give a wee try on the old audio here. See if I remembered how to do all of this. Ahem. CIA, you are not just on the line, you are the line. If you wanted to unmute, I'm happy to take your question, comment, challenge, criticism, whatever you like.
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, good. I was just wondering, I've been struggling a lot with a bit of I was just wondering about whether you think socialism or capitalism is the sort of the way to go for most societies.
Well, that's a very good question, a very important question. And
I think it's a pretty tough one.
I don't think so, but I'm certainly happy to have it be more difficult than I think it is. So tell me, what do you mean by socialism? Let's do a defined terms, right? What do you mean by socialism and capitalism?
Just like, you know, like getting stuff for free versus like working hard for stuff.
Getting stuff for free versus working hard for stuff. Okay. Can you break it down a little bit more? What do you mean by for free? I mean, kids get stuff for free, right?
Yeah, like a kid.
I can hear somebody giggling in the background. Are you trolling me, my friend?
No, sorry, mate. That's my fucking dad. He's got some problems.
Okay, no problem.
We're fans. We're just messing around.
Okay.
You got hung up on?
No, the thing about getting stuff for free is it just makes life a lot easier. But then this capitalism just seems to be the sort of hard road.
Okay, so how in socialism, how do people get stuff for free?
From like the government.
Okay, so the government does what to get people stuff for free?
Well, they use like a bit of aggression, or sometimes they do unprincipled things.
Yeah. So if, let's say there's a welfare state, which there is in most countries, certainly in the West, there's a welfare state and you don't agree with it. You think it's unhealthy, bad, toxic, wrong, traps the poor in a permanent underclass, encourages bad decisions, discourages good decisions, and harms children by promoting family disintegration. So you say, I, in my infinite wisdom, do not wish to contribute to or participate with in this welfare redistribution state. What happens to you?
Well, in my opinion, I think it brings families closer together.
No, hang on. We got to do the call and answer question thing, right? What was my question?
Sure.
What was my question?
So I think that you're right.
What was my question, brother?
I am sorry. You spoke a little too fast, and I didn't hear it, unfortunately.
Well, I don't believe you, because if I spoke too fast, you would say, "I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. Could you repeat it?" You wouldn't just go off on a tangent. But that's okay. We're not going to be overly fussy. So,
why are you
happens
dodging my
if you decide I'm talking?
Capital.
So when I'm talking, you have to wait. So what happens in a political system if you don't want to pay the taxes that are necessary for the welfare state?
Someone else will come in and hopefully pay them for me. Like, if I don't have the cash on me at the moment, that's why there's so many people in the country. You know, like maybe I can't pay it, but, you know, there might be like 10 other people that can chip in and cover the cost.
What happens to you legally if you don't pay the taxes?
I've gotten in trouble. I've gotten like a letter in the mail a couple times.
Okay. What happens if you don't pay your taxes in the long run?
I got like a letter in the mail with like a debt on it. And then I called the debt company and they told me to just pay it off at like $50 a month.
And what happens if you don't pay it off at $50 a month?
Eventually it goes to another debt company.
Okay, do you know how politics works as a whole? What happens if you don't pay your tax bill? Eventually.
I'm not sure that's as far as I've gotten.
Well, I'll tell you. What happens is they will come, well, they will try and deduct the money from you at source. If you're self-employed and for some reason they can't, they'll go into your bank account, they'll take it out there. But at some point, if you don't pay your taxes and they can't get the money from you, you go to jail. It's called tax evasion. It's not different from tax avoidance. That's just minimizing taxes. But tax evasion is a crime. To not pay your taxes will land you in jail. So socialism or income redistribution is based upon violence. And if you, I don't recommend that you do, but if you resist the policemen who are coming to arrest you, they will shoot you. I mean, if some guy is just invading your home, in most places you have, especially if you have a stand your ground or no duty to retreat, then you can use force to defend yourself against somebody breaking into your home. If that person is a policeman who has come to collect the debt that the government has imposed upon you through taxation, if you attempt to defend yourself, and please don't, just go with the cops and litigate it in court, they will shoot you. So all income redistribution comes down to threats of violence and death. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, that sounds about right. So in that case, probably the only solution would be to move to some sort of anarchy type setup, something like that. Or am I jumping ahead? Am I jumping ahead?
No, the question is around personal sovereignty and property rights. So you own yourself, you own the effects of your actions. I own myself, I own the effects of my actions. So when I said things that some people in society found offensive, because all they can do is react, they can't actually think, or they don't want to, then people said, Steph needs to be deplatformed because Steph is making these bad arguments, these nasty arguments, these monstrous, terrible arguments. And he is responsible for that, so he needs to be punished. In the same way, if you don't pay your taxes, you're the guy not paying your taxes, you need to be punished. I mean, unless they get something egregiously wrong, if you don't pay your taxes, they don't go and arrest your neighbor or your dog or your parakeet or your third cousin in Albuquerque.
Yeah. Well, I'm just wondering, though, because I've not seen that play out. Because I know heaps of people that haven't paid their taxes, and it tends to just go to a few debt-collecting companies, and then they just pay They just ask them to pay a small amount of money per month, and then eventually they just cancel the debt, you know, and they just continue getting the welfare as normal. So I'm not sure. It's just not played out that way so far. Nobody shot me.
Nobody has shot you. Okay. Have you ever heard of the Mafia?
Yes. Actually, no, sorry. I haven't heard of that one.
Okay, but you've heard of organized crime. You've heard of movies like The Godfather or, I don't know, what else? Casino or Goodfellas and so on. You've heard of organized crime, right?
Yeah, like Public Enemy, stuff like that.
I think that's a rap group, but okay.
No, there's a movie.
Oh, there's a movie, Public Enemy, with Edward G. Robinson?
Yeah.
Anyway. So, in organized crime, a lot of what they'll do is they'll come up to you. If you open a store or a restaurant in their neighborhood, they will come up to you and they will say, gee, that's a really nice store you've got here. It's a really nice restaurant you got here. It'd be a shame if it burnt to the ground. And by the way, there've been a whole lot of arsonists in the neighborhood, but we guarantee we will protect you from the arsonists. You just have to pay us $1,000 a month. Now, most people pay that money. And so the fact that people aren't, like the whole neighborhood isn't being burnt to the ground doesn't mean it's not violent, right? So the fact that people are paying doesn't make it not violent. The fact that most people pay their taxes doesn't mean that taxation is not dependent upon the initiation of the use of force.
Right.
So the question is not between capitalism and socialism. Capitalism says you own yourself and you own the effects of your actions. And the only way, the only moral way that your property can be transferred to someone else is gift or trade. You can give stuff to someone else or you can trade it. But there's no way that you can be morally stolen from or threatened and have your property extracted that way. In other words, capitalism says the moral laws of property rights and the non-aggression principle, which is you're allowed to use force in self-defense, but you can't use force to initiate it. So capitalism is the acceptance that human beings are human beings regardless of what pieces of clothing they happen to be wearing. You know, if I put on a toga, and Lord knows when it's breezy out, that's pretty tempting. I like the tickles. If I put on a toga, I don't become a lizard. If I put on a funny hat, well, I don't become the Pope, but neither does the Pope in terms of being able to access God's infinite wisdom like that. But if I put on a funny hat, I don't become a marsupial, and if I put on a toga, I don't become a lizard. Human beings are human beings regardless of costume, regardless of outfit. And so people who are in the government, they say, oh, I'm in the government. And that gives me different rights, opposite rights from everyone else. So if you are in a business and you want to quit your partnership or you want to leave, you're allowed to leave. If you're Alberta and you have a referendum signed by hundreds of thousands of people to leave Canada to establish an independent state, which would probably mean joining the US, but something, then you should have the right to do that. But of course, they found this indigenous loophole where it's been banned and, you know, Lord knows what's going to happen with that. But it's like 40 people overturning the wishes of 300,000 plus, but that's politics. So under capitalism, property rights and the non-aggression principle are respected. Under socialism, they are violated. In other words, people initiate the use of force and take your property by force, kind of at will. I mean, certainly to some degree within the bounds of the law, although that doesn't seem to hold particularly well in some circumstances or situations, but it is the difference between a respect for property rights, a respect for the non-aggression principle, or stealing from people at the point of a gun. So capitalism and socialism just sounds like, you know, two different roads in the same town, roughly. You know, one goes north, one goes south. They're, you know, different ways of doing things. No, that's like saying that a sexual assault and lovemaking are just two different ways of interacting. It's like, well, I guess technically they are, but one is evil, which is the initiation of the use of force, and one is not evil, which is lovemaking. So it is the difference between peace and force. Sorry, go ahead.
You would consider socialism to be like rape and capitalism to be like just normal sex?
Well, yeah. One is voluntary, the other is coercive. So trade is voluntary and rape is coercive. And the transfer of property through gifting or through trade is, or contract, which is just another kind of trade. So the gifting of property is voluntary. If somebody sticks a gun to your ribs and takes your property, that's evil, that's immoral, that's theft. So yeah, it is not, I mean, there are different ways of transferring property in the same way that, you know, sexual assault and lovemaking are different ways of transferring bodily fluids, but there's kind of an essential moral difference in that one is not evil and the other one decidedly is. So capitalism is moral, a socialism is evil because it initiates the use of force at an institutional and non-escapable way.
What kind of sexual act would you consider communism to be like? Would that be like...
All right. Well, I mean, I think it was useful to talk about this, guy's a bit of a doofus. So I will get rid of him.
Would we consider it to be...
Yeah, no, that's... people who can't follow arguments or who are just trolling, it's useful to explain these things, but I'm not going to engage in that. Nathan, what is on your mind, my friend?
Hi. I just wanted to ask a quick question. Because just to clarify where you stand on this. So, you said capitalism is good because it's consensual, I guess. But we live in... I'm from the U.S., by the way. We live in a capitalist country, but our country still takes taxes from us, as you mentioned, by force. So how do you reconcile that? That's my question.
Okay. Why do you say that you live in a capitalist country?
I assume that you would agree the U.S. is capitalist, but maybe that assumption's not correct.
Oh, no. Okay, so, if you've been listening, sorry to interrupt, hang on. So if you've been listening, I'm sure you have, what is the definition of capitalism?
So I would define it as being able to own assets that can produce income for you. Essentially, you know, because what preceded capitalism, from what I understand, it was basically serfdom, where you don't own your own land, you don't own assets that produce income for you, but under capitalism, you can.
Okay, so it's being able to own assets that produce income for you?
That's how I define it, yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, slavery would fit that definition, right?
Yes.
But slavery is not capitalism.
Okay.
Otherwise, there would be ancient societies, Egypt, Rome, Sparta, Athens, which were heavily dependent upon slaves. We would not call those capitalists. So it's not, I mean, if you come up with definitions, and it's a very useful and interesting thing to do as a whole, this is called Socratic reasoning, which you say, okay, here's my definition. Is there something that fits that definition that kind of feels wrong? And it's not necessarily proof, but it's a good place to start. So if you say capitalism is owning assets that produce value, that would include slavery, that would also include owning livestock, because livestock are assets that produce value. Cows produce milk, sheep produce wool, pigs produce meat, and so on. And of course, we wouldn't say that every farmer throughout all of human history, hundreds of thousands of years, or at least 10,000 years or more, based upon when farming started or what people considered that to be. So the ability to own assets that produce value would include slavery and livestock, but those things are not synonymous with capitalism, if that makes sense.
Well, that makes sense, but I would actually push back on you on that a little bit. I would say that slavery actually can exist in capitalist systems. And in the US for a while, that's actually what was happening, right? So I guess my issue mainly is that there may be a distinction.
Hang on. But you can't, that's not a valid argument. Sorry to be pedantic and annoying. It's not a valid argument to say, I have defined every single aspect of America throughout all of its history as capitalist, and since the South owned slaves, therefore capitalism includes slavery. Because the question is, if capitalism is respect for private property rights and the non-aggression principle, then slavery was a violation of capitalism because it was owning human beings and using force to hold on to them, to keep them. To keep them from running away or rebelling. So it was the initiation of the use of force. And if you own yourself, you can't also be owned, which is why originally in America, it was life, liberty, and property was the sort of three pillars, life, liberty, and property. They had to get rid of property because the argument was you can't own property and be property at the same time. That's why they changed it to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which was much more, I don't know, reefer gooey nonsense. But if you say, as I do, that capitalism is a property rights and the non-aggression principle, then where you have slavery, you don't have capitalism. You can't just say all of America was capitalist and America had slavery, therefore slavery is valid under capitalism.
Okay, so here's my follow-up question, and apologies if you've covered this. So are there any countries in the world right now that you would view as capitalist under your definition?
Why would you say it's my definition?
Well, under the definition that you've presented, I don't know if it's yours or if it's not yours.
Because if you say my definition, it's like saying my mathematics or my physics. I'm a rational philosopher, which means I'm coming up with definitions that fit reason and evidence. And if it's my definition, it's kind of diminishing my argument. It's sort of like subjective and personal. I'm just sort of pointing that out. Like you wouldn't say, well, under your math or your numbers or your physics or your biology, right? It's either good or bad physics, math, and biology. It's not personal or not. And the idea that capitalism is private property, non-aggression principle. A private property means you can give or trade your property in any moral fashion you want, but force cannot be initiated against you to take away your property. Your property also being yourself, like we own ourselves first, and then we own the effects of our actions as a consequence. Like I have my body, and then I have a shadow as a consequence of having a body. If I didn't have a body, I wouldn't have a shadow. And property rights are like the shadow cast by self-ownership. So as far as any country in the world, there are various countries that get closer to or further away from private property and the non-aggression principle. I mean, a typical example would be, and I'm sure you've seen these pictures, North Korea, South Korea. North Korea is a communist hellhole dictatorship with massive violations of the non-aggression principle. It's the largest open-air prison in the world and no private property rights. South Korea has significantly greater, massively greater private property rights and respect for the non-aggression principle. It is far more free market than North Korea. So there are various countries, if you look at Florida versus Cuba, right, 80 miles apart, Cuba is a communist hellhole. Florida is much closer because it's a pretty conservative state and conservatism often allies itself with the free market because God is about free will and personal virtues rather than being forced to do good, which is what socialism is. So if you look at Florida versus Cuba, then you see two very different societies. So there are various countries that are closer to or further away from private property and the non-aggression principle, but there is no country that is 100% private property and the non-aggression principle.
Okay, that makes sense. So basically it's a spectrum, essentially, to paraphrase.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, was there anything else? Well, it looks like not. All right. Well, thank you for the question. I appreciate that. And I I'm not testy about this, Steph, your definitions and your philosophy and so on. It's just that you should have a debate about definitions. You shouldn't diminish them just by saying yours or not yours, right? So if I say 2 and 2 make 4, you can argue with me, you can accept it, but you can't say, well, based on your math, you know, because you, if we have the correct definitions, we should get to the truth. If we don't have correct definitions, we should make sure we get the correct definitions. Zen, thank you for joining us tonight. What is on your mind?
Hi. My question is, well, I'll start by saying my understanding, though it might be incorrect, is that capitalism is a word that was first sort of used, coined by socialists in the 1800s or something. And I just wanted to ask your thoughts on sort of maybe the history of the word, but also I just feel like we're kind of debating a lot of things on leftist terms that they they're very prolific in inventing new phrases and words. And, you know, the word capitalism sort of, for me, it's connected with the word capitalize and sort of has this slight connotation of exploitation. And I just sometimes wonder if the way that the debates are framed, including also just like the whole left versus right dichotomy sometimes, and also capitalism versus socialism, I feel like we're debating on turf where if we could reframe the debate in different terminology, it might work better. I don't know. These are just, I'm kind
okay,
of
so, yeah,
here.
I mean, I'm certainly happy Das Kapital has sort of popularized the phrase in a lot of ways, a Marxist seminal work. Okay, so how would you approach it?
Well, I don't know. I'm just asking for your thoughts because, like, if you just look at how a lot, for example, how a lot of young people think in America, they, you know, I think the word capitalism is like the sturdy word for a lot of them. And I just feel like, you know, the academic institutions and leftist Marxists, especially a lot of stuff going back to, you know, French sort of power in that whole subject area with Marxism and all that. I just feel like they've sort of done, it's sort of this trickery that they've managed to pull off by creating terminology that we end up arguing.
No, no, it's like, sorry, you keep repeating yourself. So I understand.
Okay.
So you don't like the word you don't like the words capitalism and socialism.
Well, no, I wouldn't go so far. I think, and I'll draw a parallel with left versus right. I think it's useful, but similar to like classical physics, I think it breaks down at some point. For example, if somewhere in Asia you have Muslims versus Buddhists, I don't know that left versus right is a useful way of thinking.
Yes, but I haven't talked about left versus right. I mean, you're bringing that into the topic. I know.
No, I'm using that as a parallel. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm trying to understand your point here.
Right.
That we shouldn't use capitalism and socialism.
It's not that I'm not making a point really. I'm just asking if you have any thoughts on if you've had any thoughts on that. Just because
on what? I'm trying to understand what you mean. On using the terms capitalism versus socialism.
Well, for example, Thomas Sowell said one, he was asked about the word capitalism, and he said that it was, I'm very much paraphrasing because I don't remember exactly what he said, but that it was kind of stupid because it's not really an ism. It's not really a movement of intellectual thought that occurred so much. And when you ask leftists when they think capitalism began, they have a very fuzzy answer about it. You see what I mean? Or maybe not, I don't know.
I'm not trying to simplify your thoughts, I'm just trying to understand them. It seems to me that you don't like the fact that capitalism is a term of insult deployed by leftists. The capitalist equals the rape of the earth and exploitation and selfishness and greed and a small number of very rich people and a very large number of poor dependent people and proletariat. Is it that?
I mean, partly it's, like if you take, I've seen people use the word voluntarism and these kind of things. And I think they're trying to make it like describe the same thing while making it sound better, making it more. I mean, it's like with anti-fascism and Black Lives Matter, they're putting this label on it. It's like, how can you be against Black Lives Matter? How can you be against anti-fascism? So, you know, I'm not trying to ask something about a deep philosophical point. It's more like a matter of strategy and tactics and labeling. Could there be? I was just wondering if this is something that you've thought about much or not. But that's all.
And again, the something being that we should use words other than capitalism. I'm not trying to diminish what you're saying. I'm trying to get the focus on what it is you want me to answer.
Well, maybe. I mean,
No, you have the question. I can't guess what you're asking for. You have the question. Just try and tell me what it is that I can. I don't want to do an answer that's not related to your question in particular. And it seems to me you said, well, capitalism is a term invented by leftists. It's used as a form of opprobrium or insult. And so is
not, yeah, you, I, okay, I suppose
bro,
my question
bro,
is,
can you not talk right in the middle of me talking? Please.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Thank you. This is like this modern curse. Or just so my understanding is that you don't like the term capitalism because it's an insult term coined by leftists and you're asking other alternatives. Is that what you're asking me?
I mean, I wouldn't say that I don't like it, but yeah, that's a fair...
you don't like it. You said it was a negative term invented by socialists that is sort of poisoned the minds of the young. You find the term negative.
I wonder if we could sort of reframe things differently that would be more effective.
Okay, so by reframing discussion. Things, again, I'm just trying to make sure I answer your question specifically, right? By reframing things, you mean use terms other than, say, socialism or capitalism, because socialism has been pumped up with all this happy, happy joy juice of it's being nice and taking care of people and giving healthcare to the sick, and who would be against that? And that's just being a caring society, and capitalism is like evil pencil, mustache, monocle, fat capitalist, raping factory workers and exploiting the proletariat. Is that what you mean? That they've become terms of propaganda?
Yes.
Okay, so again, when I'm talking, I don't know why people have such trouble with this. Is that what you mean?
Sure.
Sorry, you sound like you're just saying sure when I've spent 10 to 15 minutes trying to understand what your actual question is.
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
great.
I can say that's my
question.
So
I hear what you're saying, and now that I understand your question, which was exactly what I said 10 minutes ago, and I don't know why people have a tough time just getting behind what they're saying, but there it is. So you have to use terms that people understand. If I invent something called Stefan Basilism, nobody's going to know what that is. I'm going to spend my time explaining it. And then eventually people are going to say, oh, you mean capitalism? Well, yes, but I don't like that word, right? So in the conversation I had with the rather giggly fellow at the beginning, I didn't use just capitalism and socialism, I unpacked them as violations of persons and property. Socialism is the initiation of the use of force to harm persons and property. And capitalism is the non-aggression principle and property rights. And just at the end, as he was kind of over-talking me, I said that a capitalism is peace, and socialism is force. And I use the analogy of lovemaking versus, what is the essay? They call it these days, probably too late for that for the show anyway. But yeah, that is what I have done. So I didn't just use the term capitalism or socialism. I redefined them. Socialism is violation of persons and property. It's violence and theft. And capitalism is people own themselves. They own the effects of their actions. And property should be transferred through trade or gifting. It should be transferred voluntarily and not coercively. So I think I didn't use just the terms capitalism and socialism, but I drilled down to the moral elements of those. And I understand, you know, the left has poured a lot of energy into making capitalism look and sound bad. If I were to reframe capitalism, I would just call it toddlerism. And what I would say to people is, they say, well, capitalism is bad, right? And I'd say, okay, do you have any toddlers? Yes or no? Okay, have you ever talked to any toddlers? Have you ever, you were a toddler yourself. So what are the rules we give to toddlers? Well, the first rule is don't hit. Don't grab, don't steal, don't take, right? That if you have some other toy, if there's some toy that some other kid is playing with, you don't get to whack him on the head with a big block and take the toy, right? So you can't initiate the use of force. If the kid wants to play with you, hey, you know, heartwarming, beautiful Norman Rockwell family scene. We love it. We take photos and we feel proud as parents when our children share well. I'm still waiting for my daughter and she's 17. No, I'm just kidding. She's great. But it's toddlerism. So what do they say as toddlers? Don't take other kids' property. Don't hit other kids. That's it. That's what, if you can get your toddlers, because toddlers are, of course, statistically the most violent people on the planet outside of leftists. But, well, when I say toddlers and leftists, I'm just talking smaller toddlers and bigger Soros-funded toddlers. But it's just toddlerism. What you say to your kids, if you can get your kids to not hit and to not grab, to not take, to respect persons and property, to not initiate the use of force, and to not take other kids' property or what they're using or playing with, you've done a great job as a parent, and it takes quite a while to get your kids to do that. So in the same way that our localized physics can't be contradicted by some, you know, big-ass string theory, multi-dimensional superstring nonsense, you can't contradict the basics of our, you know, physics, that, you know, things have sort of heft and weight and momentum in our personal lives. In the same way, we can't have big, giant, abstract morals that are the exact opposite of what we teach our toddlers, which is don't grab, don't hit, don't initiate the use of force. Of course, if some kid is whacking you, you can push him or whack him back, so self-defense is fine. If you decide to trade, I don't know if you've ever seen this. I love this scene. Jeffrey Tucker writes about it in one of his books. It's this great scene. You get a bunch of kids together, and you all go out trick-or-treating, and all the kids come back, and you get this coked up sugar bomb money ball scene where the kids are all trading. Oh, I don't like this candy. Oh, I like that candy. And they're all trading back and forth. It's a beautiful thing to see. And it's very heartwarming. It tells you just how instinctive trading is for human beings, trading to mutual advantage. And if I like Aero and you like Kit Kat and I have Kit Kat and you have Aero, we both trade. I get the Kit Kat I like, you get the Aero you like. And because it's a voluntary trade, we're both better off as a result. But it's only because it's voluntary. And so kids trade, and if kids are trading, we don't say, well, that's bad, that's wrong, you're exploiting, blah, 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 right? Kids have this property called candy, they can trade it to mutual advantage. It's a beautiful thing. So capitalism really is just the rules we teach toddlers not being bent, broken, and reversed when enough political power aggregates, which is a bizarre thing when you think about it, of course, that we teach toddlers these rules called don't hit, don't grab, don't take, don't steal, don't push, don't shove, don't whatever, right? And then we run our entire society on the exact opposite of everything we tell the toddlers. A little freaking confusing. Does that make sense?
Sure, yeah.
All right, is there anything else you wanted to mention?
I guess a separate question, if that's okay.
You just have to get behind that question, so I don't have to 10 minutes big circular okay. thing to get you well, to say exactly what I asked at the yeah. beginning.
I used to follow you on YouTube a long time ago, and then now recently I've seen you on X, and I'm just curious, sorry if you've said it many times, but I'm just curious like what you've been doing since then, because I'm pretty sure you were banned, right? And I'm just curious about your thoughts on the ban. Obviously, it's probably silly, but...
Sorry, this is a modern phenomena. I never know when people's sentences are over. I want to do this, but... And I'm waiting for more, right? Sentences should end with, and that's my question, or can you respond? Or this trailing off thing is... I'm just giving you... Okay. I'm giving you a tiny bit of tips, because I'm like a professional communicator.
Yes.
People should know when you finished asking your question. See, that's kind of annoying,
yeah,
right? You don't know if I'm going to continue
just
or not. So, it's a fine question. I don't mind answering. So, what is it? 2026 May 2026. So it's, a little under 6 years ago that I was deplatformed. I was wiped off the map in a very coordinated, efficient, centrally planned and executed way. I was wiped off 20 major platforms and payment processors, all within a very narrow span of time, all, of course, leading up to the 2020 election that occurred with Biden v. Trump. And what did I do? I've written 4 books since then, 3 novels, and Peaceful Parenting. The novels are The Present, The Future, and Dissolution, all available for free at freedomain.com/books. I'm a really great fiction writer. Dialogue is my specialty. And so I hope people will check that out, peacefulparenting.com. I have done call-in shows. I now have public free call-in shows and private paid call-in shows at call.freedomain.com. And of course, I was not really able during COVID, and also because of the reputation attacks and damage, I was not really able to do tours. I've had a meetup or two in a fairly subterranean fashion. And I have continued to do shows, and I've done a lot more abstract philosophical work. I've kind of got out that treadmill grind of day-to-day politics, and I've done larger philosophical works as a whole. I'm currently working on a new movie about rational ethics, which is, it's actually going to be quite gripping. I'm very excited about it. And if you're a donor, you can get that at freedomain.locals.com. You can sign up for a subscription and you can get previews and give me some feedback, but I'm very excited about that. So yeah, bunch of books, bunch of shows, some meetups, and calls. That's what I've been working on, and it's been great. And of course, my daughter is going to be 18 this year, so I've also been enjoying. It's funny, you know, I was just talking about this the other day with someone, that deplatforming gave me countless extra hours with my wife and daughter, and that's been great. Because, you know, when your kids get to be teenagers, they become more peer-focused. That's exactly how it should be. But I got a lot of great time in there over that process, which has been fantastic. We have the house full of guests and visitors as we speak. I can hear them out of one ear. But I spent a lot more time with friends and family. I wrote some books, did a bunch of shows, and then came back on X.
Is there anywhere to access all those old videos about philosophy and everything, or is that lost forever?
No, that's all available. FDR for Free Domain Radio. Radio was the original nomenclature. FDRpodcasts.com. James, we should probably get FDpodcast.com, freedomainpodcast.com. But FDRpodcast.com, you can just do a search for all of the thousands and thousands of shows. And when you find the show you want, you can just, if you want the truth about, you can just do a search for truth about. Click on the show, and below will be links to a variety of places where the videos still exist. So yes, you can catch all my old material with very few exceptions that way. FreeFDRpodcast.com.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate your questions and your time. All right. Here's somebody you know was raised harshly. And I say this with sympathy, because when you're raised harshly and people ask you, is this what you mean? People get a little freaked out. Oh my gosh, we've got people who want to talk. All right, unprincipled. Yes. Yes. Unmute. Fondle my ears with your dulcet tones.
I'm unmuted. Can you hear me?
You're kind of quiet, bro.
Oh gosh, I have my AirPods on. I can try taking them off. Let's see. How about now?
It's the same, but I can fix it in post. Go ahead.
Okay. I am starting a new business, and I am going into an existing market. My background is in working on startups in tech. But I'm out of that now, and I'm wondering if you have any advice or experience on entering a pre-existing market. And I'm starting is in the consumer market, and I can give you more details if you're interested.
Yeah, a few more details would probably be helpful. Yes, did you hear me? Hello? Did we lose him? Well, I'm afraid we will have to remove him. Maybe his AirPods ran out. So one thing that I would do is that if you're asking a business expert for information, you probably want to have your AirPods charged because that could be a once in a lifetime. I've been a director of marketing, so I know quite a bit about marketing. And if you get a free business consult, you should probably make sure that your AirPods are charged because it could be a once in a lifetime thing. All right. Dole.
Hello.
Hello.
I've been a listener for about 15 years, so it's cool to come on.
Oh, very nice. Thank you for listening for so long. I appreciate that.
No worries. I did miss the band era, unfortunately, but yeah, it's good to be back. I have a question or kind of a fun proposition that follows on from a previous conversation. The analogy about capitalism and lovemaking, I think, is pretty funny. And I wanted to ask
if... No, but it is actually quite serious, though. I mean,
no, of
one is a voluntary
serious.
Exchange of bodily fluids. The other is the enforced injection of bodily fluids against someone's violently against someone's will. So it is, I know it's a shocking analogy, but it has a very important and essential moral truth to it.
Couldn't agree more. And I think that someone earlier equated communism to gang rape. Excuse me.
If you're going to use those analogies, the giggling makes you sound like a total fucking sociopath. I know you're not.
I'm definitely not a sociopath, but I understand. I understand the seriousness.
The evil. So anyway, go on.
No, of course. Well, because principally we're talking about consent, you know, and the use of aggression and coercion, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the analogy is that capitalism would be the consensual sexual activity between two consenting adults, heterosexual adults.
Well, the analogy is definitely there, but it's really specific to the exchange of values, goods, or services. So nobody's forcing you to have a conversation with me today, at least I hope not.
Yeah.
And you don't have to, right? So capitalism is just like being alive and not being evil. That's all it is. So capitalism doesn't say you have to make love, you have to not make love. Capitalism just says you can't use force in sexual activity. That is assault.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's evil. And so it doesn't
like
mean,
saying,
sorry, yeah. hang on. So if you say capitalism is like lovemaking, it sounds almost like you have to exchange goods, but you don't have to. You can live in the woods and you can build a log cabin. You can not exchange anything with everyone. And as long as you're not violating persons and property, it's all perfectly fine and moral. So in the moment of exchange, it's a good analogy, but capitalism is much wider in that you can't initiate the use of force against persons and you can't steal. You can't use violence against people who are peaceful and you can't steal. You can do anything else. But so lovemaking is like a positive action. So in the moment of exchange, it is a good analogy, but it's not a perfect analogy for the free market as a whole.
I think it works great because fundamentally we're talking about economic systems as well. So the exchange part is really, it crosses over very well. The bodily
fluids,
but
you can be a monk who neither makes love nor assaults people in a sexual manner, and that's perfectly fine. And you could be somebody
Absolutely.
Who does not interact with others for the purposes of trade, and that's perfectly fine too. So it's useful and it's helpful, but only in the moment of trade. But of course, most of capitalism is not about buying and selling things. It's about spending time with family and doing your hobbies, and or at least a lot of it is. So sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. And I guess in that sense, it's like you were saying earlier, like, it's not your definition of capitalism or your mathematics or anything. This isn't an ideological system that's imposed on the individual. It's just the principle of exchange.
So the word capitalism was invented largely because with private property that began long before the Industrial Revolution in the enclosure movement, which is where they began to not have serfdom, and they began to rationalize the lord's lands. Because what happened was, in the Middle Ages, a bunch of kids and so on, the land all gets split up further and further. It becomes impossible to plow effectively or maintain effectively, and food production was going down. And then with the fall of serfdom and the rise of turnips and winter crops, I've got a whole novel about this called Just Poor. You should check it out. It's a great, great book. So the enclosure movement, where land was rationalized and people were, they sold their land. Sometimes they were kicked off their land if they were just squatters and so on. And this created a base of urban proletariat that the capitalists could use. So what happened was, in the past, the king had coercive power and the priests had spiritual power. But there was no capital power. There was no accumulation of capital. And of course, Christians weren't allowed often to lend money at interest, so that turned to Jewish money lenders quite a bit, which caused a lot of bring the Jews in, kick the Jews out, based upon whether you want money or don't want to pay off your debts a lot of times. But the rise of the bourgeoisie, the rise of the capitalist class, the rise of the merchant class was a very new phenomenon that threatened the propaganda coercion classes, the propaganda class being the clergy and the coercive classes being the aristocracy. So the rise of the merchant class created a new power element that threatened the coercive and the propagandizing classes. And the coercive classes and the propagandizing classes rely on each other, right? So the propagandizing classes train everyone to obey the government as if it's not violent, and the government retains a monopoly on violence to keep the unconscious threat alive. And also, it gives a monopoly to the propagandizing classes in return for the propagandizing classes praising government power. You can see this happening in education, particularly higher education now. The government gives teachers and professors and so on monopolies and special privileges and months off in the summer, and you can't get fired, and you get all the health care that your goldfish can consume. And so the government gives all of these privileges to the propagandizing classes. And in return, the propagandizing classes tell everyone that we all need the government, and the life would be hell without the government, and the government is necessary for stability and health and all of this sort of stuff. So the propagandizing classes praise the government, as the clergy used to, by saying that the king is the appointed there by God, and he's the head of the Corpus Christi, the body of mankind. And so, yeah, the propagandizing classes tell everyone how necessary the government is, and the government, in return, gives special protections, monopolies, and privileges to the propagandizing classes. The rise of the capitalist classes was a great threat to both, and that's why they railed against it so hard. So I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's pretty much the direction that I wanted to go in as well, kind of along the historical evolution of economic system and in the analogy, you know. So, I mean, I guess we've come out of feudalism into this kind of liberal democratic order, and things are a little bit more free and closer to a principled structure. And there's kind of these other economic theories, like, you know, Marxism, socialism, etc., that have this view of historical determinism, where things are just kind of inevitably going to evolve because
Look, Marxism is not an economic... Saying Marxism an economic theory is like saying Genghis Khan has a dating theory. Marxism is just about violence, theft, and control. It is about political theft of the means of production through nationalization. It is about absolute control over human beings. So it is not an economic system. It is a cover-up for the mass enslavement of humanity. So it is not, to call it an economic system, it's like saying that sexual assault is a dating strategy. It's
That's
not.
That's where I was going with this, actually. Yes. So I wouldn't disagree with you there. I think it's an ideological justification for the use of force and violence to redistribute wealth according to the ideological basis.
Well,
of the
and
state.
You can say redistribute wealth, sorry to be an annoying guy, but it's just stealing. I mean, we wouldn't say that a pickpocket is just redistributing wealth, because redistributing is a language trick to get you to somehow believe that wealth was just magically distributed in the first place.
Right.
You know, like songwriting ability. Like Taylor Swift just, all of these songs were there and Taylor Swift just went in and grabbed them because she's just so evil in her big pair of thumpy getaway sticks, sequin perfection, or whatever you want to say. So wealth was not distributed in the first place. Wealth, and certainly in the free market, wealth is created and earned. And so redistributed is a linguistic trick that has you believe, and I'm not saying you fall for this, but just be careful of the term, because it indicates that it was somehow redistributed in the first place, and we're just going to redistribute it, but it was not distributed, at least in a free market environment, the wealth is created.
Yeah, kind of in the same way that, you know, you can't invent fanciful language around, you know, sexual assault or unconsensual lovemaking.
Yeah, I mean, Genghis Khan didn't just redistribute monogamous relationships. I mean, he shattered and raped his way across Asia Minor. So, all right, is there anything else you wanted to mention?
Yeah, just kind of the analogy as it goes, I was kind of talking about the Marxist view of historical determinism, where there's an ideal state in the future that they call communism, where everything's kind of distributed optimally, you know, after a long period of historical processes unfolding, essentially. And I wanted to tie that in with the lovemaking analogy, but we probably just don't have time for it. But I thought it was kind of interesting and maybe humorous.
Yeah, again, I would try and steer clear of the humor around these analogies because, of course, you know, we do need to be able to convince women, and the rape analogy is definitely forceful and definitely powerful, but you kind of want to keep the humor out of it because it is a very serious business. Of course, if you think of your sister or your mother or your daughter being assaulted in that way, it would be nothing to joke about, of course. Jester, if you wanted to unmute, it's lovely to see all of the callers tonight. We will try and get
hello,
to you all.
Stephen,
what's on your mind?
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Can you hear me good? Because I'm wearing headphones. If not, I'll disconnect.
No, we're good.
Okay, perfect. So I just have a quick question regarding, I was reading your tweets the other day about yelling at children and how you were explaining that, of course, it's not okay. And I saw one comment about a guy saying that sometimes when you're dealing with kids, you have to raise your voice, quote unquote, raise your voice, because there's, you know, what about this hypothetical where the kid is Naruto running into traffic and he's going to die and you have to yell at him so you save his life? So my question is, what do you think about when you make an argument about defending children or promoting the non-aggression principle and people instinctively react toward the edge cases to make the point that this is actually okay? But what if a nuclear bomb is going to fall on me and the only way to deactivate it is if I yell at my kid and that's the decibels in my voice are going to deactivate it? Like, stuff like that, I see it all the time. And when I listen to your call-in shows or interviews or things like that, there are two things I always try to pay attention to. Either when someone is speaking about their childhood and it's really horrible, I immediately turn my radar to wait for the laughter. They start laughing about the horrors that they experience, and then you call it out. You're like, "Hey, listen, you've been listening to my shows for a year, so I know you know what I'm going to say about the laughter. Don't laugh it up about this stuff." And the second thing is this phenomenon: you make a simple argument, direct, concise. Hey, don't yell at kids. Find another way to solve the issues. And then they immediately go, but what if my kid is going to run into traffic and I need to yell at him? Like, where do you think this comes from?
Well, I think it is a form of emotional defensiveness, and it is midwit exceptionalism. This is the way I refer to it in my mind, right? So if I say you shouldn't stab people, and then people say, well, what about an emergency tracheotomy? What if I'm a surgeon and it's an appendicitis and the person, like, it's this exceptionalism. And what they're striving to do is paralyze moral choice. Oh, what if, oh, right? And then they can't make any basic moral decisions. It is a way of just sucker punching virtues that it folds up and doesn't need to be dealt with anymore. And midwit exceptionalism is the difference between deductive and inductive reasoning. So deductive reasoning is 100%, right? All men are mortal. Socrates is a man. Therefore, Socrates is immortal. There are no exceptions, blah, 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 right? Inductive reasoning is balance of probabilities in general in the main, right? So I'm sure you've seen this meme where there's a guy talking to a woman and he says, the average woman is 5'4". And she says, but I'm 5'6". And he just takes a cup of coffee like, that's the average, right? The average. So when I said, my tweet was, if you yell at children, you are the toddler. Because toddlers yell and you have the emotional restraint of a toddler. Now, what people do then is they get stung by that. Now, why do they get stung by that? Because they've yelled at children. Or they are pretending to love people who consistently verbally abuse or terrified or tyrannize them with language. And language is a terrible tyranny, of course, from parents, because physical wounds will generally heal. But if someone defines you in a negative way, you're just a selfish little brat, you know, just in contempt, that kind of like it brands your very soul. It just gets tattooed onto the inside of your eyelids. And it's like letters that are everywhere you look. So yeah, midwit exceptionalism. I can think of an exception. Therefore, your rule is invalid, right? So it is a good rule to not stab people. Now, if somebody needs an emergency tracheotomy, technically, although the knife is cutting the skin, it's not stabbing. It's surgery, right? Now, if your kid is running towards traffic and you yell, stop, you're not yelling at the child. I mean, you're yelling toward the child, but you're not yelling at, you're not holding him when he's already in a safe place and yelling at him. You're like, you stupid little whatever, right? Because, and the other thing too is that you would do that for anyone. If your wife was somehow walking towards something that was dangerous, you know, like a leftist parade or Eminem, you would say, stop, whatever you do, stop. If she was painting a, what was that? It's a Polish woman who was killed by the black guy, Zerinsko, whatever her name was. If painting that mural, stop, right? Or if me giving a public speech, stop. So that's not specific to children. So when I say, if you are yelling at a child, you are the toddler, and people say, well, I can think of an exception when I would raise my voice to protect a child. But the question is, would you only do it to a child? So I'm talking about at children, which means specific to children. If somebody would say, well, there's a blind guy about to wander into traffic, I'm going to yell at him to stop. Well, then that's not a child-specific situation, right? You would do that to anyone who was wandering into traffic. And the big question there, of course, is would someone thank you afterwards? So if someone comes up and just sucker punches you in the park, you're not going to thank them later. If somebody tackles you because you're about to walk into oncoming traffic for whatever reason, you're glued to your phone or something, you're going to be like, oh man, they're going to be surprised and startled. And then you're going to say, oh, thank you. You just saved me, right? If somebody tackles you on a bus, and then a big pole comes through the bus window because the bus is turning at a weird angle or something, you're going to thank them, even though you'll be startled and so on, right? So when you make a short argument, like if you yell at a child, you are the toddler, right? Which is basically just an argument for self-control. And there's ways that you can communicate to children without yelling at them. Now, if your kid is running towards the edge of a cliff and you say, stop, okay, but that's, again, that's not kid specific. So you make a short, concentrated argument, and then people say, your one sentence argument or analogy does not cover every conceivable situation. Well, fucking duh. Of course it doesn't. You know? Well, you shouldn't break into people's houses. Well, what if it's a lonely cabin and you're being chased by a bear? You see what I mean? Like it's midwit exceptionalism is trying to find some wild edge case which can't be dealt with in a short burst of text and then complaining that the short burst of text is incomplete. Now, of course, the answer as to can you break into someone's lonely log cabin if you're being chased by a bear? Well, of course you can. And the people will be very happy that you did that. I mean, if I had a log cabin in the middle of some place and somebody had to break in to escape a bear, I'd be very happy they did because I wouldn't want a dead body And I wouldn't want someone to die when they could just break in. I mean, I'd like it if they fixed the window or whatever, but whatever, even if they didn't, it would still be, it'd be a cool story. If I had a webcam and somebody was like diving through the window being chased by a bear, I mean, that's worth of repairing a window just for the coolness of the story. So you make a short argument and people create the midwit exceptionalism and they don't criticize themselves. They just blurt out, here's an exception to the rule, because people don't want rules, because then they have to follow them. Then they have to follow those rules. So they want to create this exceptionism to create the static. Well, nothing's certain, nothing's absolute. I mean, I can think of an exception, therefore I don't have to follow any fucking rules at all. So I'm not mad at you. I'm just, you're not a toddler. So I'm just pointing out, people immediately push back against rules because they're hedonists, and hedonists don't like following rules. So the moment you come up with a rule, like, don't yell at toddlers. Oh, I can think of an exception, so I can yell at toddlers. It's bullshit. People just want to have the freedom to yell at toddlers if they feel like it, and they don't want to feel bad, because if I, as a peaceful parent, say, you're kind of an asshole if you yell at a toddler, yell at a toddler, not protect a toddler by raising your voice when they're running towards a cliff edge. Yell at, directly. And so it is not a deductive reasoning statement that you must never, ever raise your voice around a toddler. Oh, okay. Does that mean I can't shout out song lyrics? If it's rap, well, don't rap around toddlers. It will rot their brains. But people just want to come up with exceptions because they want to do what they feel like at all times and under all circumstances. They want to do what they feel like. They're fucking hedonists. So when you say, don't yell at toddlers, they say, oh, I can think of an exception so I don't have to follow any fucking rules at all. It's absolute cowardly bullshit. You gotta follow some rules, people. You can't just do what you feel like, because that's being an animal. And even animals do what they don't feel like. Sometimes they're just programmed differently. So, yeah, the moment you come up with a short, pithy statement, like if you yell at a child, you're the toddler. People, oh, I can think of an exception. I can think of something. I can think of a situation. Oh, great, great. Okay, then go yell at your toddlers, and then your toddlers will grow up, listen to me, and think you're an asshole. I'm trying to help people. I'm really trying to help people. Man, peaceful parenting is loose in the world, and it has been for 20 years now. Peaceful parenting is loosed in the world. If you're a parent, you're not going to be judged by your parent standards. If you parent the way you were parented, like I was parented in the 70s, 60s, and 70s, I cannot parent my child by how I was parented 40 years ago. Or 40 years in the past, because my daughter is going to judge my parenting not by my mother's parenting, but by her parenting and the standards that are around when she becomes a parent. So you got to future-proof your parenting, not by saying, I did the jerky things that my parents did, but look forward and say, if I live on principle, if I act on principle, if I parent on principle, then my daughter will judge me according to those principles, which are good, and permanent and useful. If you are a hedonist, in other words, if you do to your child any part of what was done to you that was negative, you're going to be judged according to your child's parenting standards when they become parents. So let's say my daughter becomes a parent at the age of 25. Okay, I had her when I was 41, right? So let's say, so she's going to start judging her parenting 25 years after I became a parent, not 35 years before that, right? So I'm talking about, let's say she's going to start thinking about, you know, moral parenting when the kid is two, right? So I was two 39 years before, right? 39 years plus another 25 years, right? We got a whole other thing going on there, right? And she's going to be judging me with a 64-year moral span. Because she's going to be judging me at the age of 25, how I was parenting, and I will be judging my parenting by how I was parented. Now, because she's going to be more contemporary, because there's so much peaceful parenting is now in the world. So when I say, don't yell at infants, I'm trying to help people. I'm saying, you're kind of a jerk if you yell at toddlers, at little kids, at kids. So don't yell at kids. I'm trying to help people. And they're like, no, I can think of exceptions. It's like, okay, have your exceptions, man. Have your exceptions and see what happens to your relationship with your kids when you get older. Just you know, I don't want you to, you know, if it's like if say people like smoking is bad for you. It's like, oh, I know a guy who smoked 2 packs a day and lived to 90. It's like, okay, well then you found an exception. Good for you. Keep smoking and see what the fuck happens to you. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes sense. And I think people are just, like you said, it's a defense mechanism. But the other thing that you pointed out, they are trying to find an excuse to yell because that's what they actually want to do. The kid is not going to run into traffic or anything like that. This is just a scenario. And I really find it pathetic how when you point out, hey, don't yell at your kids, the first instinct is to conjure up a scenario when they can.
Well, but that's so their parents justifying in their minds. Like, we all have our inner parents, right? Parents, every personality we are around for any reasonable period of time imprints itself upon us. If you've got siblings, aunts, uncles, you spend time with parents, everyone takes up residence in our head. Now, what happens is when I say, don't yell at your kids, then the inner parents of my readers say, no, it's good, it's fine, there's a justification for it, blah, 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 right? Because the parents don't want to be criticized for yelling at their kids. So inner parental alter egos are activated and people become seriously stupid. Because when people are defensive, they're stupid. You know, I try not to be defensive, I try not to be reactive and so on, because defensive reactions just make people absolutely dumb. Absolutely dumb. And so, yeah, they are protecting their inner parents from criticism by creating exceptions to the rules. And it's very hypocritical because, you know, when I was a kid, I was raised with rules and no exceptions, right? Don't cheat. Well, what if a guy's got a gun to your head and he's going to, you know, have some giant piss in the Amazon if you don't, like, that wasn't allowed. It's don't cheat. And so I was given all these absolute rules. And then when I put out absolute rules, people, oh, I can think of exceptions. It's just not, you want to create, not you, the people who give those exceptions, they just want to create a space where they can do what they feel like and not have to follow rules. Because we're taught so many stupid rules when we're growing up, that people end up with a general resentment towards rules, which is why we get all of this hedonism. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that also makes sense. And that brings me to another question I had about virtue. I remember a conversation, I don't know how long ago it was, you spoke with a younger guy about his relationship situation, that he was with a Christian woman, and you asked plainly, okay, tell me what virtues does she have? What Christian virtues? And then just asking, what are the Christian virtues? That was like asking, like a monk, a Catholic monk about astrophysics or something. Like the guy had no idea about the Christian virtues. So my question about virtue is, from a UPB standpoint, what does it mean to be virtuous? So I understand like following the non-aggression principle, not initiating the use of force against people, defending yourself if you have to, extending that to children. But that can be achieved within a, let's say, default state. But is there like virtue in the sense of active, of doing something specific within that framework?
Sure, I can give you an analogy. Let's say that you're a doctor and a patient comes to you for the first time and says, doctor, I'm an alcoholic, I'm a smoker, I'm obese, I eat 5,000 calories a day, and I cut myself. So what would your plan be in the short run?
So if I was the doctor, I would say, okay, you got to stop doing all of the things you just said. You got to stop that.
Okay, now how long do you think it would take for the person to stop overeating, stop smoking, stop drinking, and stop cutting themselves?
If the person is really serious about it, like the most difficult one would be like alcohol and then overeating, but maybe it's a long time, more years.
It probably would be years of therapy, right? Because that's a pretty messed up person. I mean, I did a call-in show with a woman whose mother was so verbally abusive, this woman was cutting the word bitch into her thigh because that's what her mother used to call her. So that's you know, that's a lot of pain. That's a lot of trauma. So it's going to be years before that person stops doing the terrible self-destructive things, right? Now, once that has taken place, it probably will take another couple of years to stabilize. And then maybe you can start to say, maybe you want to start an exercise program. Maybe you want to do some stretching. Maybe you want to take up some sports. Like, to go from negative health to neutral is probably going to be at least half a decade. And then, and only then, can you start taking positive health measures. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes perfect sense. Correcting all of the pathologies first.
Our society is based on blood and violence. Now, less so than most societies throughout history and less so than most societies around the world, but nonetheless, the foundational realities of our society is that we love violence. What's happened is the violence has become much more hidden. So we don't, like the Aztecs, we don't take children and sacrifice them on stone altars to the thirst of the tear-drinking blood gods or something like that. No, no, we throw them into leftist propaganda mills. We drug them like crazy because they're bored in schools. We harm the boys in particular by pretending that they're broken girls. And we train them in hedonism. And we also use them as collateral for near infinite borrowing. Thus, they're born into economic slavery of over $1 million worth of debt and unfunded liabilities. So we're not Aztec sacrificers. We are much more subtle exploiters. So the violence and coercion and theft and fraud and lying and brutality in our society is covered up with this, you know, sociopaths always pretend to have empathy in order to control you. That's just sort of a basic fact of human life. And so we are doing such wrong as a society that for society as a whole, we've got to stop drinking, vaping, smoking, doing drugs, overeating, cutting ourselves. And at that point down the road, society can start turning towards virtue. So people have to stop doing the self-destructive things before they can start doing the constructive things. So UPB is really focused on the non-aggression principle and property rights, because those are the two biggest ways in which people are violated. The violation of property rights that leads to government education, the violation of the non-aggression principle that leads to indoctrination and so on, and the violation of the non-aggression principle and property rights that leads to the government controlling vast aspects of healthcare and drugging children and paying parents to do it, right? Like, not only do parents not pay for these crazy, quote, drugs, but the government will give them money because their child is disabled now with some sort of disorder that's largely made up and there's no actual blood or physical test for. So yeah, there are virtues, honor, courage, integrity, moral strength, and you know, standing up for what's right and fighting evil. Most people have to find some way to stop being evil, and that's going to take them years and years and years if they ever make it. And even if we get individuals to, which I know I have, and I have myself, for society as a whole, you know, that they're making crazy people a lot faster than we can fix them. It's like a war, right? They blow people up and hurt people a lot faster than those people can be fixed. So as a society, we've got a long way before we can start talking about virtues, because we have to decelerate our plunge into satanic evil in order to find some way to turn it around and fly in some other direction. But right now, we're still speeding up towards the heart of darkness. And I'm really trying to work as hard as I can to get those squeaky, creaky, spark-ridden brakes to engage a little bit more rather than actually turning things around as yet, if that makes sense.
That makes sense. And it reminded me your explanation of something similar you said so many years ago about the gradual intergenerational change that would be required for a stateless, a free society. So I think it's connected to this, like stopping people from initiating force, the use of force first, and taking care of that, making people understand the idea. And then if they can do that, maybe later on, we can, like, people can fix the bigger problems and work towards virtue. So I think that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, and virtue, I mean, I grew up in a Christian society. The West is still mostly a Christian society, at least it's the dominant religion. And I honestly, I was just talking about this with a friend tonight before the show. I've actually yet to meet a Christian who practices the virtue in the way that I understand it, and I think in the way that Jesus, like, love your enemies and so on, right? Because every time I post a criticism of religion, I just get a lot of hostility. But it's a dumb midwit take, a sort of anger and hostility and tension. It's like, I mean, these people don't even follow their own religion. Why on earth would I take anything that they say seriously? I don't take diet advice from a fat man, and I don't take moral advice from people who can't even follow their own religions. All right. Interestingly named Costco. If you want to unmute, I'm all ears. Going once, going twice.
Oh, I'm on.
Yes, sir.
Sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, hi, Steph. Yeah, I've been a listener also for 15 years. I did actually follow and support through the banning phase.
Thank you.
I could probably honestly count the number of times I've caught a live stream on one hand, just because my schedules never seem to line up, but the stars have aligned tonight, and I appreciate the time. I do have a parenting question for you. I have 4 children, ages 9 through 17, and sorry, I'm just a little nervous, I guess. It's kind of weird to be on the call when I've just been a listener for so long. Anyway, my question is regarding, I guess, religion. So we've raised our children in the Mormon church. I was raised that way, my wife as well. And I guess in my quest for peaceful parenting and trying to preserve my children's ability to tell truth from error and, you know, the spiritual aspects of religion, which I think are probably mostly just emotional manipulations and such. But also, the world is a pretty messed up place, and we've got a pretty good community of people around us. You know, other families with young, you know, children of similar age, and you know, there's all the friendships and things that go along with that. And my wife is very involved in the church as well, and all the activities and the service that they do, and the, you know, helping the needy type activities and stuff like that, which are all great. But I guess my question is just, how do you balance having a community and I guess teaching my children to be able to like accurately tell truth from error and emotion versus spirituality versus manipulation and that kind of stuff? Sorry, I hope I'm making sense.
You make perfect sense to me. I'm happy to hear more. If you have more to say, I'm certainly happy to hear more. Oh, can you hear me?
Sorry, I can't hear you. Are you talking?
Yes. Can you hear me now? All right. Looks like he's lost my audio, but my meters are fine here.
My connection's crapped out.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll have to remove him because he's lost my audio. It's a very, very important question. And, you know, one of the things that's tough about the world is the amount of compromises we need to make. So we're social animals and we need to have a society around us. Otherwise, it's bad for us as a whole, right? I mean, isolation, loneliness is the equivalent of smoking half a pack of cigarettes a day. In other words, if you have to join the half a pack a day cigarette smoking club in order to have any social life, it evens out. Right, it evens out. So we are social animals, which means we experience high stress, high anxiety when we are isolated, which is why one of the purposes of the modern world is to isolate us from each other by giving us lies and nonsense so we can't connect. So it would be great if anyone, perhaps me, could guarantee you a better life if you live with independence, originality, thought, curiosity, skepticism, empiricism, and rationality. If you thought philosophically, if you reasoned from first principles, if you were skeptical of all authority and inherited anti-empirical stories, I can't offer you that better life. I mean, it's worked out for me. You know, for the most part, I look back with a great degree of pride at what I've been able to achieve. I mean, I've said this on X the other day, that the Overton window has shifted so much in the time that I was off social media that I've become delightfully irrelevant to some degree, right? I mean, there's just stuff that was absolutely getting me lambasted from the very top of society is now fairly common parlance, particularly among the young. So then my work is done, right? To a large degree. And that's good. I mean, I'm pushing 60 this year. I am 60 this year. So it's okay to take a couple of slow roll victory laps. So with regards to your children and the LDS Church, I have known some Mormons. I've worked with some Mormons over the years. Very nice people. And have a great deal of honor. And as you say, a great deal of community spirit, a great deal of helping out the less fortunate, a great deal of communal activities. And they're important, you know, I have a house full of people at the moment, and it's great. It's great. I love it, and it's fun. And high intelligence plus philosophy is a recipe for not exactly Friedrich Nietzsche-style isolationism, but it can be a little tough to blend with the average. So it really depends to some degree, and of course, every parent thinks their children are treasures, so I say this advisedly and with humility, it really depends how original your children are, how curious they are, how much they want to think from first principles, because it's not everyone's bag or cup of tea. If your children score high, and I mean this in a completely morally neutral way, so I don't mean this in any judgmental or negative way whatsoever, and I hope it doesn't come across that way. If your children score higher in one of the big five personality traits called agreeableness, which means they get a great deal of happiness out of going along with others, and again, there's value in that, right? I mean, that there's the things that I have around me were all built by teams, and those teams, I'm sure, had significant disagreements philosophically. So I'm not going to pretend that everybody has to work together with a team that they agree with everything, because nothing would ever get done, at least as yet. So if your children tend to be maybe more natural followers, or they tend to take more pleasure in social life, and they don't particularly have much curiosity or hunger for the truth or originality or blank slate thinking from first principles, and not everyone is like that, right? It's rare. So then I wouldn't take that away from my kids. If, and this is a little bit more along the female side, if your females are going, I mean, we want our children to be good, but we also want them to be happy. And that's important as well. So I would say that you would judge your kids and, you know, dangle the, you know, original thinking from first principles, philosophy, skepticism, and so on. I would dangle that in front of them. And if they want that and they're really hungry for that, then, you know, you got to be honest and say, you're going to have to give up some of the more familiar, or you're probably going to have to give up some of the more familiar social situations that you're in. You're going to have to strike out into the desert, and you'll find your people on the other side of the desert. But sometimes it feels like that desert goes on for a pretty long frickin' time. So if my kids were more agreeable with people and more, I would say conformist, that sounds like such a negative phrase. I don't mean it that way, because we all have biological personalities. Like, we all have hardwired biological traits to our personalities. There's almost nothing in our personality structure that is not influenced significantly by genetics. So you wouldn't want to take people who are more naturally conformist or compliant or score high in trait agreeableness and set them off the lonely path of pure individuation, because they probably won't make it, and it would just make them unhappy. And at the same time, you wouldn't want to take your kids who score, you know, high in, you know, real honesty, curiosity, thinking from first principles, and get them to conform to others, because it's like putting a round peg in a square hole. It's not going to fit, and no one's going to end up happy from that situation. So again, we want to counsel truth as a whole, but we also have to accept the limitations of our natures as well. Otherwise, we're kind of like communists who say everyone can be rewritten to do anything. All right. Thank you. And Vibe, you are up if you want to unmute. All right, going once, going twice.
You got me there?
You can hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just wondering, what do you think about drugs? Like, for example, smoking weed or going and doing like ecstasy or acid or something, or mushrooms. And the thing about it, I reckon it makes a lot of people actually smarter because it sort of gives them like a better understanding of the universe and stuff. So I was just wondering, like, you like that, right?
Like,
you like
what?
That? Drugs.
I mean, you're trolling, right?
Well, I don't know. I'm just heard that that
I mean,
stuff makes you a
bit smarter.
With
the number of E's in the word weed. Like 14 E's later, we get to the D. So, I mean, drugs are a form of self-medication for childhood trauma. People who go through a lot of childhood trauma, and particularly neglect, then they end up with unhappiness. And if they take drugs, often those drugs will return them to a normal state of human functioning, and they then realize how unhappy they've been. And they want to feel normal, not unhappy, because of their childhood trauma. And so they take drugs not to feel great, but to feel normal. Like, you know, if you've been prescribed painkillers for surgery, like the post-surgery pain, you don't take the painkillers to feel great. You take the painkillers to feel normal, right? Like if they have to drill your tooth, they put those little injections into your gums, and they do that so, not so you feel great, but so you feel not in pain. So drugs are a way of being not in pain. People who have social anxiety because they were neglected or verbally, usually it's verbal abuse that leads to social anxiety. They're verbally abused as children, so they have social anxiety, and they still want to be with people, but the only way they can be with people is to take drugs, or the only way that they can get out of bed and not be depressed, or maybe they feel suicidal or something like that. So drugs, it's a form of self-medication in general for childhood trauma. I think there are better ways of dealing with childhood trauma other than taking drugs, because if you take drugs to deal with childhood trauma, you generally end up inflicting trauma on others because they care about you and you're on drugs. So I think it's a very sad situation. I don't think that people who are well-raised end up on drugs, but I do think that people who are on drugs are often just trying to not feel like hell because of the result of child abuse. And I think in general, it has to do with society's lack of sympathy for the victims of child abuse. Juju. The Jew, so nice. He named himself twice. Juju, you are up. You are up. Questions, comments, issues, challenges, problems. All right. Juju is here. Yet not. All right. Frigg, if you would like to unmute, I'd be happy to hear what you think. All right. Looks like we have gone so far that people have dropped off. Well, a lack of patience, what can I say? It happens. All right, well, I'll stop here. Of course, love you guys. Thank you for the Mad Aussie contingent tonight. Very fascinating and very much appreciated. I like the wild thoughts from down under. Drill right through the center of the earth, and drill that crazed Aussie juice directly into my veins. I appreciate that. freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. We will talk to you Sunday morning, 10 a.m. for your Saturday morning philosophy church. Saturday morning, 10 a.m. freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. It's lean, man. It's lean at the moment on the donation front. And I don't mean to nag, because if you haven't been here around for a while, enjoy the show and so on. But if you've been listening for a while, you know, if you've been listening for 15 years, drop a little, because, you know, it costs a lot to keep everything up and running up here. So freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. shop.freedomain.com for your merch. peacefulparenting.com for that book available for free. And there's a really nice AI there. You can ask parenting questions. And last but not least, call.freedomain.com or freedomain.com/call. Really do appreciate that. Looking forward to our next conversation. Lots of love from up here, my friends. Mwah! Bye-bye.